Latu, and for today's show, we are speaking truth to power with friend of the show, Kyle Micheluk, about UBC, our favorite institution of higher learning, the looming specter of climate catastrophe, and the Unistoten blockade. So we only have until the break with our friend of the show, Kyle, so we will get started with a discussion about UBC's very own member of the Board of Governors, Nassif Guseb's blog post about UBC. Kyle, how are you?
Yo, I'm doing excellent. Thanks for having me.
How was the drive-in?
Oh, it was. I'm doing great. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, pleasure to have you.
You know, this morning I came onto campus and the UBC, the campus newspaper, had a brand new issue out. Now I was just ready to dive in it and see if they had all the crap and corruption from last year on. And you know, there wasn't a single article of worth.
Wait,
and,
what? The paper of note at UBC, the UBC, well, is not following corruption.
Well, you know,
that's happening in its own building that they're located in.
Well, get this, near the end of last year, Nassif Guseb, a faculty member and a Board of Governors member of UBC, released this damning article where, in the first paragraph, get this, like hold on to your seats here.
I'm holding.
From 2006 to 2017, the student enrollment increased by 20,000 students.
So over 11 years, 20,000 students. Getting that correctly?
Okay. And over that same duration, the number of assistant professors decreased from 619 to 408.
Sorry, let's take a step back. One second.
We're talking like this. It's just totally disproportionate.
Almost sub 400. So Kyle, can you slow it down for the show's host, who's really not crunching the numbers too well? He's a bit sleepy this Tuesday evening. So, how many years are we talking about here again?
Well, you're talking over a decade, almost 11 years.
Okay, and so we've lost faculty.
Yes, lost.
The people who let us learn, the students learn, right?
Lost almost 200 faculty, and over that same duration, increased by over 20,000 students. That's just damning. But moreover, on the same article, there's from between 2015 and 2017, the number of students increased by 3,600. Meanwhile, the tuition revenues that UBC increased by $220 million, and the number of assistant professors went down, the number of associate professors went down, and the total research faculty went down.
Okay.
It's just staggering. So the big question is, where did all the $220 million go?
Wait, before we're starting to follow the money, let's just take a step back and think about it from a learning perspective, okay? So we've all been in class. We've all had our, you know, really depressed TAs sitting there. We have our adjunct professors who's got multiple part-time hustles just to make it through.
Right.
On top of that, they're piecing it course to course, institution to institution, you know, however many institutions they have to work at, however many classes they got to teach, they're going to do it because that's what pays their bills, right? That's the state of workers, I mean, the faculty member and the workers of the UBC, who really make the learning happen, right?
Well, I don't know. Did you guys get the classes you wanted this year?
Yes, I got my two classes after untold how many years, but I know so many people are buying and selling their courses. As you can check on Facebook, you can see if they'll pay people to drop the course and let them get in there at the time. So what I'm trying to point out here is that we are dealing with a crisis for the faculty members. They are living paycheck to paycheck. There was an expose in The Guardian a year or two ago about how some adjunct professors are selling themselves for sex. And while the Kyle has just enlightened the school is pumping in students and decreasing faculty members, and then to the cherry on top, we've got how much money involved in this?
Well, within that period, you have your changes in revenue to the tune of $222 million,
holy shit.
That's a lot of cash.
Well, this is just a crude cost-cutting measure, right? You know, you take more students, yes, your expenses are going to go up. So, you know, these greedy bastards that they are, they want to keep their profits up or steady at what they were. You know what? Let's cut wages. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. But, you know, like you said, like the computer science department, it's the most cluster F thing in the world. There's nobody can get any classes. You probably can speak to this.
In a lot of faculty, some courses are just unattainable. Even if you look at the recent posts on Reddit over the last several months about the the number of mathematics classes that are just completely filled.
Mm-hmm.
But moreover,
and these aren't just, and what we're trying really to point out is that these aren't like little, you know, these aren't happening in vacuums. No, it's not like computer science is poorly run, or math is poorly run, or arts is poorly run, or solder is poorly run.
These are thousands of students.
We're talking about a system wide. The UBC system is failed, has completely failed in that sense of providing students with teachers so that they can learn. So so we're not even getting our money's worth anymore.
Listen up, people. Rankings are superficial.
But you know, this problem is holographic across society, where you have people that are in positions of public trust with initial mandate, and in no time, they end up putting their own selfish interests ahead of their public
mandate. I'm very happy you brought up the public mandate. So,
and you know what the French do to those people.
Yeah, shouts out. Yep. You know, Kyle, if this is true, what you're telling us, and if it doesn't get any better, we might have to be donning yellow vests. But I would like to discuss the public mandate for a second. So, can you briefly touch on what UBC's public mandate is, Kyle?
UBC just has a mandate for education and research and communication and transparency. Of course, it has to have the continuity of its own institution. It has to meet its budget and whatnot every year. But the very essence of the university is education and research.
Okay,
and,
so very, very plainly.
And what do you know? It's a public institution for the people of BC.
So what I was going to get to is...
You almost have to speak like a child when communicating these things to people.
I'm trying to slow it down for the UBC admins who've run away with this thing. So what you're telling us, education and research. So, and then with the public in mind, so the public being everybody, not just people with billions of dollars in their bank accounts offshore. So we've gone away from that. Now, as Ajit was saying earlier, it seems that this school is looking at this equation of students, faculty, and tuition revenue as a business. You know, it's like how many students can we cram in here to make the most amount of money and pay the labor the least? Hello, people. Education and research. Profit's not in there at any point. So there's no need to suppress the workers of this institution. There's no need for that. In fact, they're actually supposed to be put up above, because the workers are the ones who are educating us, the students. The workers are the ones that are doing the research. So the fact that the administration has turned their backs on them, and even worse, is now pitched in some, you know, class war against them. What's going on here, Kyle? Can you help us, you know, dissect why there's this big shit show in the middle of UBC's administration?
Well, you know, if they had these disparities, and say they had transitioned to a policy where they are giving every worker on campus a living wage, you know, maybe people would stand back and go, "Wow, we're raising up the entire workforce of a community of the scale of hundreds of thousands of people." But you know, UBC, and it's just like every university across North America for that matter, have transitioned away from their fundamental mandate towards becoming corporations. And it's just a bloody tragedy. You know, that's what it is. You know, because when truth becomes for sale, it's not truth at all.
It's whatever you want it to be.
Yeah. We criticize the media a lot on this show, and we've seen how the media spins anything out of control, and you know, is really just an arm of the class that oppresses us and lies to our face through it. And it's crazy how that this is also applicable to universities. And like, you know, I on this show, I mean, we got to make it a goal for 2019. You know, we got to really get in on this. You know, the corporate coup d'état that has happened in our own institution, and how it, you know, it's such a local time. Like, I spend all my time on campus, and as much as we, you know, we fret about Donald Trump and trade deals and the like, you know, I think that in general we should be talking more about, you know, the corruption that happens, you know, not too far from this very studio, right?
Well, you know, it's so important on campus, precisely because this is where formative minds are developing and where they're adopting their ideas that they're going to hold for the rest of their lives.
Right.
And so if you create an environment of transparency, accountability towards the pursuit of truth and knowledge, research and education, that's going to have cascading consequences into the future. Meanwhile, if you create an environment of corruption where there's no transparency and where ubiquitous profit maximization is the sole inference,
the only way to make it through is if you lick the boots of the powerful. We're just cranking out bootlickers.
You're creating the worst possible. Exactly, you're creating the worst possible people.
We have like
a
docile sheeple level herd that lives at UBC, drinks the UBC Kool-Aid. You know, likes all the social social media stuff, doesn't ask why, you know, UBC is still on Facebook and all these other social media outlets, even though RBC got caught, you know, in this past December that they were reading people's Facebook messages and also could edit them. So we, you know, we've got this weird corporate criminal surveillance interwoven disgusting web of people that somehow have butted their way into our everyday lives, even though that we think that we're removed from all that. It's like, oh, that's just Trump over there in Washington, D.C. Like, oh, that's just Putin over there in Moscow causing all the world's problems. Actually, people, our very own campus has turned against us. So, Kyle, was there back to the blog post that started that sparked this really fascinating conversation? You started off by mentioning how they're cutting faculty, increasing students. That's contradictory. And what we have to show for it is a $221 million increase in revenue. Is there anything else that the member of the Board of Governors, Nassif Guseb, had to say about what's going on at UBC? Anything else you'd like to bring to light for us?
Just one sec. I'm just pulling it up.
Yeah, well, I mean,
well, you know, I'm paraphrasing here as the page loaded, but basically, the Dr. Guseb made a pretty glaring comment about how there's an entrenched middle management at UBC.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the Board of Governors can change, there's this bureaucratic inertia.
Okay, so who are middle managers?
Well, you know, there must be about 200 different vice presidents of different things on
deans
campus,
or whatnot,
deans and
right.
whatnot.
And you know, Dr. Guseb, he's a Marxist revolutionary,
oh,
right?
Oh no! I
he's a fairy duster like Ajit and I.
No.
Is he a Bernie bro? Is he just making all this up?
No. This
he a Russian?
Somehow.
Is he a Russian bot?
No. This man. I've never met him personally, but uh-huh. from what I gather, he's probably one of the most reputable
really?
Gentlemen in our society.
Oh yeah. So what was that award he got? That was pretty big time.
He's on the Order of Canada and
the Order of Canada people. This is a word dealing.
But here, let me just quote the end of the opening paragraph. It's talking about the Board of Governors. He says, in spite of its new membership, the Board of Governors had learned from their pain from that painful episode and is trying to reprioritize the core mission of the university, learning and research. I am not so sure about our relatively new administration, which may still be taking pointers from an entrenched middle management.
Ooh.
And that's the big thing is like the. There's just this vast bureaucratic mess on campus that just so much fat everywhere that just needs to be cut away.
Right.
I don't even know how we're gonna go about because once these people get hired at UBC, it's almost impossible to fire them.
Yeah, and get right. rid of them. It's almost like we need It's almost like we need to change the institution right. so that it doesn't allow things like these to happen. We can't just wait for really well mannered and well put together liberals to come in there right. and do the right thing enough that we can enact change. It sounds like this is a systemic problem, which then requires a systemic solution. So.
This is establishment politics.
Yeah, this is politics. So people, we talk a lot about politics on the show, and let me tell you, there is nothing more political than your workplace.
Oh, absolutely.
As everyone who's ever been to a job, if you don't think your workplace is political, then you've never had a job.
It's not
so
exclusive
turn
to
off
government.
This podcast. You're not going to listen to anything. You're the fairy duster. And sorry to talk about our source one more time. Dr. Guseb, he is actually a brilliant mathematician with tons of awards, tons of, he's been cited many times. He's a big deal. He's not some fairy duster, progressive,
no,
Marxist,
no, you
communist,
all,
anarchist.
He has moral ethics.
Well, yeah. Like, well, and but what I'm trying to illustrate here, people, is that this isn't, you know, obviously I like to get all lefty, you know, dorm room in this podcast and have a good look at
things.
Because
there's a lot of conspiracy
shit
out there.
Yeah, there
right,
is.
Right?
And I'm not, I'm just going to start. I'm just going to say that this is coming from the most mainstream of mainstream people. The dude's a mathematician. Okay, he doesn't play around
he's
with
an
you
academic,
know.
Right?
Yeah, this is and this is a guy on the Board of Governors. He's in the belly of the beast of the mess that is our institution. Okay, so we're not dealing with some guy that just wishes things could get better. This guy's
right.
this guy's a big deal. Yeah, he is a whistleblower.
You know, Sajid, you mentioned just earlier before that you were taking a class on democracy, and you just right. talked about how workplaces are really political. You know, is it interesting that we tout publicly all the values of democratic process, but then when people go to their workplace, they suffer under a workplace
the
tyranny?
Least democratic framework.
Why is that?
And UBC's total tyranny, too, because they won't even tell us where our money goes to. $221 million extra? Wow, well, that sounds like I could have funded all of our open source textbooks that we're not getting.
We're in a living paradox.
But that's pennies compared to Investment Management Trust and UBC Properties Development Trust. There's tens of billions of dollars there that no one knows where it went.
Tens of billions. Wait, so you're telling me that UBC isn't on a bootstrap budget? Wait, what?
I'm sure they own some of these mansions out here.
Okay, so there's tons of money here. Why do we have a food problem with our students? Why do we have an AMS food bank? Yeah. Why
are food prices inflated?
Yeah. Oh my God. Why aren't we buying everyone lunch every
tuition
day?
Tuition increases.
Well, you raise an interesting point. Alex Nguyen at the UBC recently did that sustainability food sustenance article where they found that a huge portion of the UBC student body is facing sustenance insecurity.
Jeez.
on a regular basis, that people have to moderate their caloric intake because of food affordability. That's shocking.
Right.
That's disgusting. Disgusting.
That's, you don't see that. No.
This is kind of what, you know, 2019 will be. I think this is.
And they have the gall to increase tuition.
Oh, don't get me started about tuition. I would just like to make a point here that the year 2019, and this will be going through my mind, is this is dystopia on a whole other level.
We're hitting the 2020s.
Hindsight's 2020. Ha 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 ha. But for real though,
it's painful.
The brink's coming.
Well, we've passed the brink a long time ago. Okay, and why I say that is that we have now accepted a world in which we sit upon billions, as Kyle just talked about, of UBC wealth, while the people who actually pay for the school and make the school happen, the students, don't have enough food to eat because they can't afford it.
Right.
This is like some weird like neo-feudalist state that we're in where the peasant students must beg the corporate master to let them let out a few billion of their bank accounts. That's what's wrong with this planet.
God. They just tell you, climb the ladder, bro. Stop complaining.
Yeah, stop. Pull yourself up. Clean your room.
Right.
Clean your room.
Clean your room.
Makes you less depressed.
Yeah.
Get that Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, I'll get my Jordan Peterson impersonation ready. But nah.
People start wearing lobster but this hats is, and shit.
We digress.
We do digress.
Psychology is not the issue.
Yeah, well, this isn't people's individual issues. No. We're talking about a system, right? We're talking about a system of money that is totally concentrated in the hands of a few greedy people at our own institution, and the needs of the many, food, how dare they? Those entitled millennials? Ugh, Ajit. God. Maybe if they didn't spend all their money on Starbucks and avocado toast.
Or an antidepressant.
We gotta come up with some boomer memes like, you got too much money in your bank account, you don't know what to do with it except bitch about us. Like, there's gotta be some kind of like way we can throw it back in their faces.
Oh,
but yeah.
You know, 10 years out, they're just not gonna get any health care, that's all.
Yeah, thank
God. Something's gotta go.
Yeah, hopefully they die first from climate change. Anyways, Kyle, where can people find Dr. Guseb's blog so they can check it out for themselves? Yeah. I'd like to add one last thing. So Dr. Guseb, he is now an investigative journalist because he needed to put together the three numbers and charts that Kyle referenced were actually from different sources that he compiled himself. So Dr. Guseb, would you like to take over the UBC? Sounds like you're doing a little bit better work than they might be right now. Kyle, where can people find Dr. Guseb's blog?
Here, I had actually just shut down my laptop again.
Kyle, you're on the Spencer Latu show. You can't turn off your laptop.
Dysfunction. Dysfunction on the show.
Yeah, we're having technical difficulties. Our friend of the show, who has now become unfriended from the show, doesn't get...
Forever for life.
Yeah, so...
It's NGHOUSSOUB.com.
Yeah, check it out, people.
Peace of mind.
You know, it's just shocking that this information wasn't covered in the first issue of the new year at the UBC paper. They have a $500,000 budget to report on the news, and this is as newsworthy as anything else.
We have the Edward Snowden of UBC blowing the whistle on everything that's going on here, and he can't even get it. Maybe the Talon will publish him. Shouts out to the Talon. You know, I appreciate it.
We have so many publications. Yeah.
We'll give a hot lead to Discorder. Okay, we'll get some CITR in house stuff going here. Okay,
also on his website is the a letter by Professor Philippe Tortel, which was his resignation letter from the Peter Wall Institute. And why he resigned from the Peter Wall Institute is because the UBC administration basically co-opted the funding from UBC's Vanguard Research Institute.
Yep. So like, they're trying to take the money from someone else.
There's a wealth of information on this website. I strongly recommend anyone who is concerned about the future of UBC to take. It's called A Peace of Mind.
Yeah. A nice little pun for UBC, a place of mind. So that's all the time we have before the break. Kyle, thank you so much for being on here.
Thank you.
Everyone, check out Dr. Guseb's blog and stay woke to your own institution.
Right.
You know, I, as much as I love people complaining about Trump, you know, I want to hear what you think about UBC. And if you don't know how UBC works, time to get informed. Check out Dr. Guseb's blog and we'll try to do a better job of covering UBC issues on this show. So we'll be back after commercials in just 1 minute. Stay tuned.
Is there a problem, officer?
Yes, you've gotten a noise complaint.
Fight the power and listen to the brand new podcast from CITR 101.9 FM, Noise Complaint. Episodes will be released every Friday starting January 18th with performances and interviews from some of your favorite local bands. Kamikaze Nurse, Psy, Princess Apparently, Fake Fruit, and so many more. Subscribe to Noise Complaint on iTunes or download from CITR.ca starting January 18th.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke you every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to Spencer's Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Unseen Musqueam territory. I'm your host, Spencer Latu, and I'm with my co-host, Ajit.
What's up?
And we would like to once again thank our special guest, Kyle, for coming out and being awesome on our show, as always. He is the man.
Yo, thanks for having me.
Okay, see you soon, Kyle. Please, don't be a stranger.
I'll not turn my laptop off next time.
Yeah, keep your laptop. That is the rule. Rule number one of Spencer Latu Show. Don't talk about the Spencer Latu Show. Number two, keep your laptops
keep
on.
Your laptop on.
You never know what's going to happen.
You know, I'm one of those strange cats that doesn't have a cell phone.
Yeah. Ooh. Kyle's a real, real woke one. I like being surveilled a little bit, so it's okay.
Real woke.
We're very, very woke. Woke, bro. Okay, so we're going to take a little detour here. So we're discussing a bit of local capitalist exploitation from our very own friendly institution. Great smiles on all their faces and all their pictures, the University of British Columbia. Mm. So 2019, it's a new year. Ajit, do you have any New Year's resolutions that you'd like to share with everybody?
Personally, just get in better shape.
Hell yeah. That's what's
up. I feel like, isn't that everybody's
it's a really good left one too, because you know what? We need to be the best looking ideology on the block too. So we need to show people that we're the healthy way to live, you know?
And getting in shape correlates directly with your mental health too.
Yep. That's how we're going to combat it.
You know, the less we're, you know, down in the mud in our own issues, the more we can help change our own society.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, so that's good stuff. For the new year, I think what we need to do personally is we need to start dealing with the existential threats to humanity first. So for example, a lot about the government shutdown in the United States. Very, very bad stuff. Mm. Not good. Right. Don't like it. Very sad.
People ain't getting paid.
Yes, money is important. However, the government will eventually get back going. What won't necessarily get back going is the ecological state of our planet. So what I'm talking about is climate leave climate change in 2018, people. 2019 is the year of climate catastrophe, because that's what's on the table. So we're not discussing whether or not we can stop the climate from changing. It has already changed.
It's past the point of change.
Yeah.
We're to the point of meaningful.
And if you mean, and if you're an oil shill listening to this and you think, oh, Spencer, fairy duster, liberal Bernie bro, whatever. Why is it every year the forest fires are the worst forest fires on record?
Right.
Well, riddle me that.
I don't think Rex Tillerson's listening in, so literally everybody else should care about
you. Breathe in the smoke for 3 weeks. We've all been there, so let's stop bullshitting and let's start getting.
You
working,
can't even,
you know,
look
what I'm
forward to the best time of year.
Seriously,
like, literally, your Vancouver is ruined.
Yeah, if that's not enough for you, and just to know how screwed up it is, even when things like climate change hit the first world, it's still better than what happens in the third world.
Absolutely.
Which is just so wild that no matter what happens, the global south, the global north is hit hard, obviously, by climate change. The global south hit way harder.
And
so,
more frequently.
Thank you. Higher frequency and worse stuff happening. Right. So everybody, you know, that cares about climate change, just know that climate catastrophe is already happening for the people of the global south. Now we're just going to debate whether or not how much we should take.
Right.
So we skipped over our usual discussion about colonialism. But to get back to that, our usual trend, we had to throw out the cookie cutterness of the show because of Kyle. Shouts out to Kyle. I want to talk about a clip I have curated from my favorite philosopher, political thinker, who really helped me understand why everybody's lying to me all the time, especially in the media. Highly recommend Manufacturing Consent by Noam Chomsky. He's written many great books about why government doesn't work for you, Deterring Democracy, a fantastic look at the American political system, amongst many other works, especially on his political philosophy of anarchism. So, for today's discussion about colonialism, I have curated a clip of Noam Chomsky speaking about climate catastrophe and Canada. As an avid Chomsky fan, I appreciate him discussing the country we call home, although he is rightfully condemning Canada's acceleration of the dire consequences of climate catastrophe. In the video I'll play, Chomsky discusses Indigenous resistance to extractive industries such as pipeline protests. In typical New Year's fashion, it is only fitting to do a year-in-review recap of Indigenous resistance for climate justice. 2018 saw a continuation of the resistance against the continued colonization of Indigenous land and resources. The biggest and most memorable fight was over the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion, in which energy giant Kinder Morgan went toe-to-toe against the Indigenous people of Turtle Island. The fight over this pipeline divided the nation, and ultimately the Supreme Court of Canada ruled that meaningful consultations with Indigenous peoples were not done, and that the National Energy Board's review of the proposal was so flawed it was unusable to approve the expansion. This marked a victory against the pipeline this year, and the media silence since the summer is deafening. Since the fight against big oil was won for the people of this country that rely on the land and the water, both Indigenous and settlers, yeah, you guessed it, people, we need water too, the powers that be would never possibly want you, the listener, to ever attempt such a bold-faced opposition to injustice again, especially in solidarity with marginalized people like the First Nations people of Canada. Let 2019 be a year of more resistance against the powerful and more solidarity with Indigenous people and marginalized groups, so we the people can fight for a future where people matter more than profit. So we're going to take a little spin here. We're going to listen to a little bit of Noam Chomsky, let him discuss about Canada and climate catastrophe, and we'll jump in and out and do a little bit of commentary with this as well. So stay tuned for some Chomsky.
You can't expect positive feedback from power. Power systems. No, they have their own interests. Let's say take.
Chomsky begins this discussion about the powerful. So for Canada, just in reference, we're talking about rich people writ large, powerful political players such as the major political parties of Canada, as well as industry leaders such as big oil,
energy sector.
Yeah, the entire energy sector, and the oil sands people. So we'll let Chomsky take it from here.
Climate change. Canada's a good place to think about this. Canada used to be a pretty civilized society by comparative standards. Now it's becoming the scourge of the earth. It's partly Canadian mining operations, which are very destructive all around the world and are arousing great resistance among the victims, mostly Indigenous people. but also the dedication to develop the most harmful forms of fossil fuels.
So before Chomsky gets on to fossil fuels, a quick detour about mining. This is often not talked about with Canada. Ajit, have you ever heard about mining controversy in the news? You ever seen anything like that lately?
Not specifically. I know
it's not very reported
our
on.
Mining industry is huge.
Biggest in the world.
It is very shadowy.
It is extremely shadowy because Canada is one of the largest, if not the biggest, in many countries in South America. So we're not even talking relative to America, but actually the largest amount of capital they're pouring into these countries. And the reason why is because they... Our legal system has also set it up so that the people of these countries that we're mining in and taking their resources from them, they cannot sue Canada or the country or the companies that are extracting resources in their country. So just keeping in mind, we'll definitely be doing more about mining imperialism in Canada later. But just so you know that this is a serious problem in many places. And Canada, if you go to South America, does not have the same ring that it used to, because the people of these countries know what happens when Canadians show up. They're here for one thing and one thing only. They're here to steal resources to just so that they can keep the fat cats in Ottawa happy. OK, and then all the other business people, especially Goldcorp and all those other horrible, horrible giants. Oh, yeah. We'll do a larger deep dive into Canadian imperialism another time. So back to Chomsky.
Just this morning's newspaper, there's a discussion, and take a look at the business section of the New York Times. It discusses Canadian plans of Canadian corporations and the Canadian government to vastly expand the pipeline system to the west to aim for the Asia market and to the east so as to be able to reach directly to Europe and the rest of the world without going through the United States. And it points out that there are difficulties at the West. There are problems with First Nations. The town where they wanted the major export terminal to be has voted strongly against allowing it to be used. The indigenous groups are struggling hard against it. This is typical. This tells you, first of all, it's partially an answer to your question. It also tells you something very interesting about the current world. Take, say, Canada. And this is typical. The richest, most educated sectors of the society with the greatest advantages are pressing very hard to escalate the threat of global destruction. The people who we consider primitive, you know, in Canada, First Nations, in Latin America, indigenous people, in Australia, Aboriginal tribes, in India, tribal societies. Now, they're the ones who are trying to retard the threat. And what's happening in Canada is typical. And it is a kind of an interesting, you know, if you can separate yourself from the horrifying consequences, it's an interesting kind of paradox, if you like.
Mm-hmm. So that's quite a thought bomb dropped by Chomsky on us there. So he's making the point how the richest, most powerful, most privileged people, white men, and rich people in general, who on average actually inherit their wealth more than earn it, like normal people do. And in fact, calling it earning it is a little bit misconstruing, because most of these people make money on capital gains and owning other people's labor. So really what they do for society is lost on me. But what Chomsky's really trying to get at here is just look at the people who have everything for them, all the oil executives, all the big wigs in the military industrial complex of Canada, all the big wigs in big energy, all the big wigs in politics, everybody who's a somebody somewhere, and all they can do is accelerate the problem. Right. So they take climate change, you're like, that could kill everybody. I don't know, let's bring us to the brink faster. That's how rich people view it, and powerful people, and people who really have a say in our society. So I make that point a lot, because right now, you know, if the people in Ottawa really wanted to do something about climate change, it'd be done in like a heartbeat.
Right.
They really wanted those Canada Post workers to get back and delivering Amazon packages. Wow, they moved quick when that happened. Yeah. Real fast when Amazon wanted something to happen. So hypothetically, it is empirically true that they could convene parliament tomorrow, change the world.
Mm.
hypothetically, I'm just saying it's true. They could.
Right.
Will they? Obviously not, because the business interests they represent, mainly big energy.
Well, they're
bought and paid for by those people.
Right.
So they're not going to. Then Chomsky brings in the real nail in the coffin, indigenous folks. And we talk about indigenous people a lot on this podcast and on this radio show and podcast. But we talk about them a lot because, in my opinion, is the most symbolic view of our world. If you want to take a look at the socioeconomic bottom rung of the ladder, the people who are the worst off, just sure. Right out the gate due to their race, it's indigenous people. And who are the people fighting tooth and nail, putting their bodies on the line for us?
Right.
Are they the rich, white, powerful people that we're supposed to lick the boots of every day? Mm-hmm. Absolutely not.
Right.
It's indigenous people. People who get spit on. People who get thrown bottles at. People who are called racial slurs every day of their lives. Exactly. Treated like garbage. They're fighting for you.
Right.
And I don't know if there's a better story in our society or a better way to understand human history or the class or the struggle against the powerful and the factors, which are mainly imperialism and capitalism,
right,
have led us to this point.
I think, and the crux of the issue is that it hinges on a middle society, i.e. the middle class, the majority, us, and we are largely being duped by the corporate interests, by the top. Reading some Facebook comments, and I know that's not indicative of what most people think, at least I hope not, is that
I'm praying it's not.
Right. They'll find any excuse to discredit indigenous people protesting this. They'll be like, oh, they're just taking orders from their chief, or the reservations has deals with corporations, which is true that it's unceded territory. They should get some form of compensation, but at the same time, there shouldn't be any police incursions. But anyways, I digress.
Yep. Don't worry, we'll get into police incursion soon.
Right. We shouldn't be so quick to jump the gun that, and this is a product, largely a psychological byproduct of capitalist society, is that we equate wealth with legitimacy and some greater form of truth, that because they're rich, they're powerful, their way is the correct way, and it is probably more, I don't know why we think it's more sincere, which is total bullshit, but we're led to believe that,
we should take these people at face value, right, with good face and pretend like they're being authentic when they say crazy stuff, right, like we need to find a way to work with the big energy people. We're supposed to pretend like that's good faith. But when indigenous people say we need to protect our land because without our land and our water, right, we're nothing, we just dismiss them immediately.
Right.
But as soon as a rich person talks about, the deficit, you immediately believe them.
Right. And simplistic living is sometimes the best form, right? And it's showed, you can just see the progression of where society, we reached a high point with development, there's no doubt about that. We passed that line long ago,
mm-hmm,
at the point of productivity and something prosperous for society. Well, honestly, that was just a facade that was sold to us by marketing or whatnot.
Yeah.
And capitalism.
It was. We live in a world where, well, we lived in a world that needed to be sold to us and, right, packaged a certain way.
Right.
Okay, it was meritocracy in a nutshell. It's,
right,
we lived in a world where you work hard, you get ahead, you get a white picket fence, two cars, and 2 weeks vacation. Right. Everyone kind of bought into it, even though no one really asked, hey, how does a guy that works in a factory afford that? Right.
Right.
It doesn't make sense.
And
but
that's
now,
the apex of your society.
And that's the golden age, which is,
right,
just so sad. That's what people want to go back
and
to.
What history showed, the suburbs were disgusting once you looked inside.
Yeah.
They were depressing, they were depraved, they were...
And it's because we live in this dominating world where it's just somebody stepping on another person. And the reason why I keep bringing up indigenous people is because ultimately they're the people who are stepped on first, because they,
right,
needed to,
right,
be, before any of us got exploited at our workplaces, we needed to, purge this continent, mm-hmm, of the people who are already living there. And that's,
right,
the first rung of the first step of imperialism imperialism and capitalism, wiping out these people, taking the land, exploiting it. And I would like to end on that note of exploiting the land, because, you know, let's be honest here. Why did people show up in Canada in the first place? You know, did they want a vacation here? Hell no, they died in the first winter. The only reason they came out here was to steal stuff from this land. Right. Furs, precious metals, right. And now it's oil too. And
all natural resources.
And because at the end of the day, Canada is a resource colony. Yeah. So surprise, surprise, our society is basically that what underwrites it is resource extraction. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't changed since first contact.
No.
So all I'm saying is that it's about time we change things, okay? And for our next segment, we're going to be discussing the people who are fighting to change that. So we're very lucky that we have people like that in our world, okay? So we'll be right back after these commercials. Don't go anywhere.
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire, Cheetos, fleece material, and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute. Just visit CITR.ca/discorder/contribute. You can grab it around town or read it at discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
It's not just rich people that own the media.
I own my 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 media.
The Media Co-op is a grassroots national news network that's owned by its members. Join us today at mediacoop.ca/join.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory. I'm with my co-host Ajit.
What's up?
I'm your host, Spencer Latu, and we're going to be discussing the Tai'i article by Zoe Ducklow, posted today on the Tai'i.ca. Check it out. Great website for all BC-related progressive news. This is an analysis piece about 9 things you need to know about the Unist'ot'en blockade. So the RCMP moved Monday to break up a First Nations protest. Here's how we got to this point. So the reason, you know, we're talking about Indigenous people and climate change is that we're faced with a world and a class of people who run the world that are pushing us to the brink as fast as they possibly can so that they can maximize their profits. And who do we have on the other side fighting back against them? Is it those MAGA people, the Donald Trump supporters who are big tough guys, or is it the Jordan Peterson people who really think about, you know, they're so smart and they're better than everybody? Well, no, it's actually the people who are treated like shit every day. It's Indigenous people who are on the front line. So right now in interior BC, right around Houston, British Columbia, we have what could turn into the next Standing Rock. We'll get into the points just so we can break it down for everybody. So where is the Unist'ot'en blockade and what's it about? So the gated checkpoint is on a Forest Service road about 120 kilometers southwest of Smithers in Unist'ot'en territory at the Maurice River Bridge. 2 natural gas pipelines are to cross the bridge to serve the Kitimat LNG project. Unist'ot'en is a clan within the Wet'suwet'en First Nation. Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs claim title to the land based on their pre-Confederation occupation and the fact that they've never signed a treaty. Their claim has not been proven in court. The gated checkpoint is meant to control access to their traditional territory. A protocol for entry based on principles of free, prior, and informed consent is publicly available. While the first checkpoint was built by the Unist'ot'en clan, all the hereditary chiefs of the Wet'suwet'en First Nations have affirmed that their consent is required prior to any development. TransCanada's coastal gaslink pipeline will carry natural gas from Dawson Creek to Kitimat. It's in early construction phase. The proposed Pacific Trail pipeline, run by Chevron, proposes to transport natural gas from Summit Lake to Kitimat for conversion to LNG. This pipeline received an environmental assessment certificate, but the investment agreement has yet to be finalized. And another point that we got here. So There's a really beautiful map, if you check out this article, of showing where the pipeline goes and where the people have set up a camp along the pipeline route. Thank God that they're there. They established this checkpoint in 2009, and they've been doing work for now a decade, almost come April 1st, of making buildings and stuff along the way. So hopefully these oil and gas companies will respect the UN declaration UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous Peoples. I doubt that they will, but it would be really nice if they did. Right. So we the company at the center of this, Coastal GasLink, applied for an injunction in November 2018 because workers have been unable to cross a checkpoint to start clearing the pipeline route. The BC Supreme Court issued a temporary injunction in December prohibiting anyone from blocking the bridge. The court also ordered the checkpoint to be dismantled within 72 hours. It's in the news now because not only did Unistoten camp refuse to take down the checkpoint, their neighboring clan, Gidmonton, established a second checkpoint. The injunction was expanded just on January 4th to include that checkpoint as well. Throngs of people are traveling to join the camp in solidarity. God, I wish I did not have class. And on Monday, the RCMP mobilized to enforce the injunction. Oh, my. Rallies are planned. There was one today. Hopefully people could get out to it. I didn't check in on it soon enough. I apologize. I'm being a bad lefty, and I'm sorry. Ajit, are we surprised that the RCMP and just the police force in general of this country are now in the midst of doing the bidding of a gas company?
Well, this is just confirming the reporting we've been doing so far that, you know, they act as the enforcement branch. Because Lord knows these companies can't actively use their private militias in public here. So, you know, good thing we got a public police force to do that.
Speaking of this public police force, so for whatever reason in Canada, this kind of went under the radar. We have like our own national police force, the RCMP. They're kind of looked at as bumbling idiots. And if you've been pulled over by one in your suburban area, they generally are. But on its face, it's kind of a bizarre concept that we have a national sized group of people that
paramilitary.
Yeah, well, and they occupy the entire country for the sake of the federal central government.
Right.
And for whatever reason, that's okay. Anyways, I wish we were doing video one day. The Spencer Latu Show will get into 2119, and we can get to see this picture. But it is basically the pigs dressed up in what seems to be army fatigues. And it says police on them for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And they're all carrying high-powered weapons, armed head to toe. You know, they've got helmets, military equipment, and all that, balaclavas, gloves. And it looks like they're ready for war. Ajit, who are they going to war against exactly?
Right, the native folk with no weapons at all.
Yeah, do native people have military style training or gear or anything like that, or are they just kind of regular people trying to live off the land? And now they have frickin' Coastal GasLink, you know, breathing down their necks, trying to jam a pipeline through their own territory.
Right.
And this is why we say that this is an ongoing genocide, because this picture. Oh, I really wish we were doing video. This picture of RCMP dressed up basically as army men is really. It really encapsulates the war that's been going on. And it's never stopped. You know, the RCMP, you know, they used to do the red coat thing.
Right.
And they were still doing the same job, displacing Indigenous people, pushing them out of the way for Canadian business to come through. If it wasn't in Sir John A. Macdonald's day with the railroad where they're starving people to death along that route of the CPR, it's in 2019 where we have, you know, army pigs sent out there with high powered machine guns to tear down Indigenous blockades on their own territory.
Right.
It's the same thing, looking slightly different, but doing the exact same thing. So who called in the RCMP to raid the camp? The RCMP's job is to enforce the injunction on behalf of the court, and it's not necessarily raiding the camp. On Monday, tactical teams began to dismantle the Gidmonton checkpoint. Last evening, RCMP reported 14 arrests of people who refused to comply with the court order. The individuals were taken to Houston, BC. solidarity to those 14 people arrested. You know, thank God there's people putting their bodies out on the line. And wow. Imagine showing up to work and arresting climate change activists.
Right.
That's incredible.
Must make you feel really big.
Yeah, must be big, guys. Hey, whoever bullied them in high school, you better apologize, because we wouldn't have this problem if it wasn't for you idiots. As of Monday night, the RCMP had breached the Gidmonton blockade, but had not reached the Unistoten blockade or camp. The Unistoten camp beside that blockade, which has been in operation for nearly 10 years, is not part of the order. And since it's not in the way of construction, access can likely remain as is. It's the pictures coming out of this are pretty terrifying, because it's got all the RCMP dressed up as looking like soldiers. And the imagery,
it's quite telling.
How do you feel it's telling?
Well, just like the complete unevenness of the situation that we just outlined, the fact that you got, on one end, the most powerful institutions going up against literally, like, the other thing that we outlined, the most kind of people who live a very primitive lifestyle.
Well,
non-violent.
Yeah, like, well, that's what Chomsky said about them, right? He's like, you know, they're people that we perceive as primitive. They're not obviously primitive,
right?
You know?
Primitive in the sense that they live very simplistically, right? They're not infused with technology to the same degree as people in the cities are.
They don't have Amazon Alexas in their homes. Right. No Siri to talk to when they're bored like we do.
Right. And their intentions are not nefarious.
No, they're not even profit-driven. It's like, it's bizarre. They're not even like a private tyranny of a corporation. They're just people trying to live where they've lived since time immemorial. And for whatever reason, that's not okay, according to Canada and Coastal GAS. So some other points to touch on. What do the people at the checkpoint facing arrest say? This is Freda Hudson, is one of the people named in the injunction. She works at the Healing Lodge in the Unistoten camp. "We didn't agree with the injunction because they didn't hear our side, and we have too much to lose. We don't want them to say that we can be in a reservation and stay in my buildings here, but they can destroy the rest of the territory," Hudson said in a Facebook video on Monday. "I'm here now because this is my home. This is where I live. This is an unjust system that we live in. My people have been pushed aside for hundreds of years, and it hasn't stopped. It's still happening right now. My people live off these lands. The gate is for our protection. We had racists coming in and shooting rifles, ramming my gate with vehicles, and using explosives to blow up my gate. And the police in Houston know, and they did nothing about it. They said, not enough evidence." This is a really revealing quote. Ajit, can you believe that there's people in Canada who are racist to Indigenous folks, and that the cops wouldn't do anything about it?
Well, I think that's been happening forever, right?
Speaking of RCMP not doing anything, apparently, I heard this the other day. Apparently, a couple of years ago, there was a suicide attempt by a lady on top of one of the parkades, and it was because the cops did nothing. The UBC cops did nothing about about her sexual assault case. So,
wow,
it's weird. It's almost like the police aren't here to help us.
No.
Hmm.
What's their true motives?
I wonder.
Who's their boss answering?
Yeah. Who is the commissioner answering? Are they just the guard dogs of Capitol? Probably.
Probably.
Freda has another great line. God, Freda, you get it. You know, shouts out to Freda. We need to get her on the show one day.
Right.
And now the state. I blame Justin Trudeau, John Horgan. If you guys are listening to this, you guys are behind this project. You guys are behind approving these police to come in and treat me like a criminal. And all I am is doing living on my lands that my clan has title and rights to. You say reconciliation? This is not reconciliation. You're treating my chiefs and us as criminals. We're not criminals. This is our land. Wow. That is amazing.
Right.
That is something that I think escapes a lot of people. And you can really get it out of them really quickly when you talk about Indigenous folks, that they don't feel like they owe them anything.
Right.
And like, they go on this weird tangent about like, oh, but everybody loses land in wars, and, you know, conquest is like natural. And it's like, well, not all conquests are still continuing to this day.
It's like, are we still at war then?
Yeah.
In your mind?
Exactly. So, like, I think it's just really telling. And I'm glad that Freda is one of the people that can see right through this and can see that there are people in the government, even our good guy, John Horgan, and our really annoying fake lefty, Justin Trudeau, they are people who ultimately need to start, you know, taking a look in the mirror. We all know who Justin Trudeau's accountable to,
right,
which is oil and gas. We can only hope John Horgan sees the light and just realizes, like, this is not something you want to put your stamp of approval on. Ajit, any thoughts of the political implications of this pipeline protest?
Well, I think this is going to be the major story of the upcoming year, of the upcoming months or whatnot. This is a natural gas pipeline expansion that they would like to do, right?
Yeah, this is a natural gas pipeline, yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah, I mean, we're going to just have to wait and see. I don't doubt that the police are going to... They're going to be more hesitant, I feel, because the wider BC community and Canada too at large has taken notice. And good thing we're assembling and whatnot and protesting against this. We're going to have to wait and see what develops. But, I mean, if you want me to take a guess, I think the RCMP will get hesitant, but it's going to delve into some some legal issue.
Yeah, I hope it does. And I hope that the courts, obviously I have no faith in our broken system to do anything as we are being thrust in and accelerated into climate catastrophe. It's bad enough. Okay, sorry. I didn't make this connection soon enough. It's bad enough that they are, just for the sake of like land rights, property rights, blah, 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 that they're jamming a pipeline on unceded, on land that is not theirs to put it on.
Right.
That's bad. Now let's put it into context. Now the context is that we have, the IPCC report said 10 to 12 years, well, they screwed up the seawater, how much heat it took in. So we're looking at 8 to 10. And that's like very conservative,
right.
Very conservative numbers. And so we're somehow in a place where climate catastrophe is imminent being 8 to 10 years. And the Canadian state that is meant to serve the people and help the people, yada, 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 is sending in their guard dogs of capital, the RCMP, right, to go break down Indigenous blockades on Indigenous land to jam through a pipeline that will only exacerbate the problems of climate change.
Right.
Climate catastrophe. And
this is exactly what Chomsky said.
It's mind-blowing.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Chomsky's philosophy, for real, though, he really gets this moment that we're living in. And I see it the same way, too, because it blows my... Well, I'm not surprised, I should say. It's just... It's kind of like... It's hard to stomach at moments where that you can have people in such high office with such authority, such power, and they wield it just to serve, like, an abstract idea of profit.
Right.
Which only helps, what, like, 300-ish people? And it's just... It's
revealing.
Hard. It's hard.
It's what it should be.
Yeah, it should be illuminating for everybody. Right. If you ever wonder what makes the world go round, what gets these people to do these sick and depraved things of looking at climate catastrophe and being like, "Oh, you know what we need? One more pipeline."
Right.
This is exactly what we need. No, we don't need that stuff. And thank God. I really want to ask cops, Are you proud? Do they go? I bet they probably go around bragging about how many protesters they lock up and how they took down the barricade and all that screwed up stuff. They're just sick. I hate cops. So gross. I'm just looking at the pictures, just scrolling through them. Just how disgusted. There's a video too of them breaking it down, of breaking down the checkpoint. What an embarrassing job. I would rather work at Starbucks than be a cop.
Yeah,
I couldn't look at myself in the mirror if I was walking around with a freaking high-powered rifle. But I guess that's why these are the people that become cops, because they're really not known for their critical thinking. They don't really see how absurd and obtuse this is.
They gotta have an avenue for their masculinity, which they feel is threatened.
How many of them do you think own 12 Rules for Life by Jordan Peterson? Do you want to take a guess? What percentage of cops? 50% of cops can't
read.
Yeah, 50. So that knocks out 50%. So what percent of 50%?
Like 100.
Okay, so we have 50% of people who can't read and 50% of people who only read Jordan Peterson.
Right. They probably drive a
that would explain,
pickup truck too.
Yeah, drive. Well, honestly, pretending that they're stupid is like giving them almost a way out. I just think that they're just, this is what happens.
That's the worst part. They're not stupid. They're just ignorant.
Yeah, they're ignorant. They're proud to be ignorant. We covered how they have a Facebook group about bashing natives, where all they can do is talk shit on the internet. So just so you know, it's not just like regular average folk that talk shit. It's also cops. These people disgust me.
Which is what they are, buddy. Regular folks.
Yeah, regular folks who don a badge and a gun and think they can go push indigenous people around. Yeah. So let's hope indigenous people don't take arms against the cops, because that would go really poorly for the cops. So that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for tuning into the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We have more awesome programming coming up for our CITR. And on top of that, you can find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Check out the Spencer Latu Show there. We'll be back next Tuesday, 10 p.m. We'll be talking mad smack politics and whatever else comes up. We'll be following UBC stories in the upcoming weeks, and we'll be covering a lot more Indigenous protests, especially as this issue heats up. So thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week.
For a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule, being a big sister takes less time than you think, and you can choose the volunteer opportunity that fits your life. Spend just 1 hour a week as a study buddy, tutor, or 2 hours a week as a big sister. Check out the various mentoring programs at Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland and find a volunteer position and a little sister that will suit you to a T.
I'm like, dude.
Visit bigsisters.bc.ca for more information today.
But that's the thing, right? Like, are you a decent cop? Like, okay, I'm a decent cop.
Alright, hello and welcome to another year of Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music Show. My name is Matt. If you're a brand new listener for a brand new year, you're about to hear an eclectic mix of songs from Australia and Canada, from the independent music worlds.